And good morning. It's 8:08 on CCO. Happy 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. 250 years today. Amazing. We are joined this week on Smart Gardens by Hennepin County Master Gardener and expert with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, Teresa Rooney. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Laura. Happy 4th of July.
And to you, what do you have planned this weekend? Anything fun?
Absolutely nothing. Just sitting Perfect. In front of the fan trying not to melt.
Oh, I know. I hear you there. Oh, my gosh. Hey, I thought of you this past week when I was on vacation on the East Coast because we were in Cape Cod for a while, Boston, and the coast of Maine. Mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you the massive amounts of blue hydrangeas bursting out of every window.
Yes.
It was so beautiful.
Cape Cod is like hydrangeas central, I think.
I couldn't even believe what I was seeing. And I thought, why can't we have blue hydrangeas back where we are? They're all just white or sometimes pink.
I can tell you why.
I know you can. I know it has to do with the soil and the acid levels, right? What's the deal?
It does. So not all hydrangeas change color.
Okay.
Like Annabelle's just stay white forever. You can never change them. But many do get impacted by the acidity level or the pH level in the soil. When the pH is lower, more acidic, you will get the blue. When it's higher, more alkaline, you will get the pinks and the other colors and the reds and things like that. So that's why out east their soil is very, very thin, very acidic, and that's why they get blue hydrangeas so easily.
And we don't have that acidic type soil.
We live on the limestone bluffs and the very alkaline soil of southern Minnesota here.
So. And what can you do if you wanted to amend your soil so you can get some blue? You can do that, right?
Yep, you can. So when you purchase your hydrangea, it will be blue already, probably, because that's a big selling point for most people for hydrangeas. So they've already acidified that soil. But now when you add it back into your garden, you need to acidify the soil. Some people will say aluminum sulfate. I personally prefer soil sulfur. That one to me is just it's a no-brainer, and I can't overdo it, really. I mean, you'd really have to put down pounds and pounds, and you're not going to. So when you bring home that hydrangea that you want to change to blue and you live in southern Minnesota or you've gotten a soil test and you know that your pH is above 6, then you're going to add a handful or so of soil sulfur into the soil that you're planting your hydrangea in. Now, that is like throwing a bucket of fresh water into the ocean and expecting to change the ocean not salty. It just doesn't happen. Your soil is a huge environment, and it is going to go back to its normal. It's going to stretch and go back to its normal. So to keep that soil blue, you can, if you're going to feed your hydrangea, feed it something that will say for acid-loving plants. And then if you're not even going to feed it because the soil is nice and organic otherwise and full of good nutrients and it's got all the stuff it needs in there and you have a nice healthy soil even though it's alkaline, just top dress your soil twice a year. In the spring, as soon as it's coming out of dormancy and it's not frozen any longer, and then in the fall again. It takes the soil sulfur about 3 months to get working into the soil, so it'll work all winter, and then it'll be ready in the spring, and then the spring stuff that you put, the spring sulfur that you put on, put that on in spring, and then by the end of growing season, it's there for the plants again. Can do that for your blueberries. Understand it's going to be a lifetime commitment if you want that to stay blue.
And let me try to simplify this for myself, who has never touched or never grown a hydrangea. What if I just got some good, high-quality soil, put it in a pot, amended it to increase the acidity, and planted those blue hydrangeas? Will they stay blue? Can they just be in a pot that is a smaller, you know,
you
container?
You could, with some caveats.
Okay.
You're going to have to water it a lot more. hydrangea, hydro, water. Mm. It reacts to the soil moisture very much. And by watering constantly, you will eventually leach that out of the soil.
Yep.
It will eventually become not acidic enough. Also, here in Minnesota, we have this thing called winter, and it gets a little cool out there, and the plants above ground in containers are in a very limited space.
Yeah.
They can freeze. If they would just stay frozen, that would be fine, but then they have micro little bits of the parts of the soil that thaws. And then it freezes and it thaws. And every time that soil goes through that cycle, it can damage roots and eventually have no more roots.
Okay.
So come spring, the plant is dead.
Okay. Well,
so you could sink the pot into the soil and let it, that will help it with the moisture level a little bit. That may help it survive the winter, a number of winters. It's not connected to the main soil, but it's getting some buffering from the main soil. It's out of the sun in the winter. The winter sun can warm up plants enough that they come out of dormancy, even though it's really cold in the air. So you can try it.
I think,
just understand anything's possible.
Yeah, and I think this might be a good little project for me to tackle next year, because mm-hmm. I'm already having my hands full this year with my very first vegetable garden, which is flourishing. It is fabulous.
That's wonderful. It's amazing what rain and sunshine can do for plants.
I did not know what to expect, and I'm sure I planted everything too close together, because mm-hmm. I have cucumbers that are like spilling all over everything,
yeah.
and the vines are going nuts, and then these
yeah.
lettuces keep popping up. Every time I cut the lettuce to eat it, mm-hmm. it's back within a few days,
yep.
and it's like
that's called cut and come again.
Oh, I love it! It's mm-hmm. I had no idea that I could mm-hmm. simplify my life like this. It's
yep.
so great.
Now, eventually, those lettuces will become bitter, because the plant wants to go to seed, so it builds up some lactic acid in the plant, acid, and it becomes bitter, and that's so that the bunnies and you stop eating it, so it can go to seed.
It's telling me something.
Yep. So in the hot weather, that's why the lettuces are mostly cool season planting.
Gotcha.
So they may not live much longer with this heat that we're seeing.
Yep.
And next year, what you can do is you can plant those lettuces earlier. You can plant those lettuces on the north side of where your tomato plants will be.
Yep.
And the tomatoes will give them some shade as the tomato plants get bigger. And that may buy you a week or two or three of continual lettuce munching.
Good idea. We have some texts already, Teresa, so let's
get
to the text line. This is a lawn question. Is it too late to apply GrubX this year? If yes, when should it be applied? Will the GrubX I purchase still be good next year?
The GrubX will be good next year if you don't like get it wet and then it dries out. That just kind of messes with it. I'd probably even put it where it could be a little protected. But even in a garage that freezes, it's a solid product. It's a powder product, a granular product, so it'll be just fine. Just don't get it wet. It depends with the GrubX. It depends which grubs you are looking to kill. So you need to make sure that you have identified the grubs you are seeing in your lawn. And then I would go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, head over to the lawn care, and then look for grubs. And it will you'll be able to identify the grubs by how big they are, what's going on with them, because size matters. When they get so big, eventually they stop eating, and then they'll pupate into the beetles that they'll be turning into.
Oh, lovely.
So putting down GrubX after they've stopped eating isn't going to hurt them at all. So you don't want to waste your product. So it depends on the size and the type of grub and when they're active and where they are in their life cycle. So you have to figure out the grubs and then figure out how big they are and then read the Extension website suggestions on when to treat it.
Okay, good. I thought a grub was a grub. I didn't know we had all these varieties to know.
We have all kinds of varieties.
Oh, great.
It's like we don't just have one kind of mosquito. We don't just have one kind of bird. We don't just have, one kind of butterfly. There's a number of different little species in there.
They should make a little poster with all the different grubs on them so you can help identify what you
have.
Oh,
no, that's just why you have the extension website.
Yes,
so you
do.
Can go investigate on the website. And then while you're doing all this serious investigation and learning, someone else is cleaning the cat box and sweeping the floors and making dinner.
Yes. So,
because you're helping with the landscaping in your yard.
I like how you think. That's a good plan.
You've got to get out of work when you can.
Yes, especially in the name of investigating and making your garden prettier. Okay, when should you stop harvesting rhubarb, a texter would like to know.
You know, I would probably stop by mid-July at the very latest. And then you want new stalks to be coming up and lots of leaves to be coming up so that the plant can be getting ready for next year's harvest, so it can be getting lots of energy and store that energy in the roots. So give your plants time to recover. The same with your asparagus. You know, you want to give your plants time to recover if you want to grab food next year from them.
Okay, perfect. It is 8:18 on CCO. You're listening to Smart Gardens. We are joined by Master Gardener Teresa Rooney today. We're taking your calls and your questions via text or phone, 651-461-9226. I'd love to hear your voice on this beautiful 4th of July morning, so don't be afraid to pick up that phone and actually give us a call. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Teresa's answers to questions on the text about deer eating hostas. Let's see. We have some indoor anthurium plant leaves that somebody is eating. We need to have her discuss that. All of that and more when we come back on CCO. And good morning. It's 8:24 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes. Hope you're easing into this nice holiday weekend with some fun plans or maybe some no plans at all. Whatever suits your fancy on this 250th birthday for the United States of America. We are in the middle of Smart Gardens with our Hennepin County Master Gardener, Teresa Rooney. The texts have been rolling in. We also have a caller on the line right now, Teresa. So let's go to Kathy in Chanhassen. Hi, Kathy. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call. My early girl tomatoes are looking really weird. The leaves look like someone took a black Sharpie and traced around each individual leaf. And after a couple days, they turn brown, and I have to pull them off. I don't know what's going on. They just look really strange, and I can't find anything online.
And you've gone to the extension website, Kathy?
Yes, I didn't see anything. It's like somebody traced an outline, a thin line around each individual leaf.
That's very strange. Do the leaves wilt, or do they just kind of keep getting browner and browner and crispier and crispier? And
Yes, okay. They get browner.
Okay, so what I'm thinking, I'm not 100% sure, so what I would do is I would, the minute you see that dark outside on the plant, take those leaves off immediately, and then before you use your pruner on any other plant in your garden, and then I'd even wash my hands, just to break whatever's going down. Make sure when you water your tomato, you're watering from the bottom. You're watering the soil, not getting any moisture on the plants at all. What else would I say? You may want to, if you're anywhere near the Twin Cities or you're near a farmer's market where there are extension master gardeners, bring a leaf sample in, maybe two when it's just starting and when it's looking a little worse. They might have little microscopes they can look and see if it's a fungal infection or something like that. It almost sounds like it's something in the air that's doing it. Make sure you're watering the soil, that you have mulch around your tomatoes so nothing from the soil can jump up on and splash up onto the plants. Remove some of those bottom layers of leaves till you get to the one with the very first flower on it. Don't remove anything above that. That will give it some breathing space. I'm not really 100% sure. So also what you can do is take some pictures of when it starts and what it eventually looks like. You can go to the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and go down toward the bottom on the right-hand side. It'll say Ask a Master Gardener. Click on that, and you will be able to send up to three pictures, three photos to a master gardener and say, what's going on with my early girl? That's all I can say. I don't exactly know. I'm not a tomato disease expert. I know we've got some really wonderful master gardeners who really get into that, and they could probably give you an answer right away and say, Teresa, why don't you know that? Because I don't grow many tomatoes because I have all shade in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would try, Kathy, and I hope you can find the answer. And after the show, I'll be doing a lot of research to figure out what I should have been able to tell you.
That's all right. Thank you very much for the call, Kathy. We appreciate
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, and I want to blow through some of these texts, Teresa,
okay.
Because we have a lot of them coming in.
Cool.
Deer continue to eat hostas. That's a common problem.
Mm-hmm.
How harmful is that to the plants?
If the plants keep losing their leaves all the time and keep having to grow more leaves, they can be impacted because they can't photosynthesize enough and store energy in their roots and be happy. It's like you not being able to eat. You eventually get weaker and weaker and weaker. What you might want to do is do a trapeze over your hosta bed. If it's a big bed of hostas that they're getting into, put some sticks, some taller stakes around your hosta bed, get some bird netting or deer netting and spread that over those stakes. Just kind of drape it over. It's dark, it's black. Your eyes will ignore it eventually. And it's like a trapeze in a circus act. The deer will move their head down toward the hostas and they will encounter this black thready, netty stuff, and they won't like that. And hopefully then they can go away and eat someone else's hostas. And that will also just protect your hostas and just do it above the hostas and just deal with the look for as long as you can break the deer of eating the hostas.
Very good. Thank you very much. Another caller on the line, Teresa. We have Henry in Rogers. Good morning, Henry. What's up?
Good morning. I've got a question on my oak tree. It hasn't been bearing any acorns for about the last 3 years, 2 years, somewhere in there. And this year, I got tons of acorns, but to the size of a pea. And they're already starting to drop, I know, which is way too early.
Yep. So thanks, Henry. That's a really good question. So this may be a heavy acorn year. Lots of times trees will all fruit, like the nut trees will fruit 1 year in an area really heavy, and then they'll be quiet for another few years. It's called masting. And they will be dropping the extra fruit, the extra nuts, because they can't carry all of that to maturity. So they're dropping a lot now, but there's still a lot up there that they haven't dropped. It's like the windfall of apples that we get in early summer. The tree is very ambitious and thinks, I can do 2 million of these. Then reality sets in and the oaks say, maybe we could do 1 million. We can't do two. So we drop half of them so the rest can come to maturity, and then we can have full-grown acorns at the end of the season. So that's probably what you're seeing. Just watch the tree, but I would say everything's totally normal, and you're seeing a wonderful kind of just weirdness in the tree this year. And it should go back to more normal next year. Good luck.
Sounds great. Thank you for the call, Henry, and thank you, Teresa. It's 8:30 on CCO. We have a lot of texts coming in. We'd love more, and we'd love more phone calls. 651-461-9226. Coming up, we'll have Teresa talk a little bit about white clover in the lawn this year. Also, is it okay to use runoff water from reverse osmosis on outside plants and shrubs? Those questions and more coming up after the break. And thank you for waking up with us this morning. It's 8:35 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes, joined by Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, who is also an expert with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. We appreciate all of her fabulous information this morning. And Teresa, I want to get to a few more texts. Somebody has something eating their indoor anthurium plant leaves. There are bumps and chomp bites on the leaves. What might it be, and what can I do to stop it?
Wow, that's an interesting one. So if you don't have pets that would be doing that, a cat, a bird, a dog, kids, grandchildren playing with plants and poking it with weird things, then you probably do have some kind of insect. I would say, without seeing the damage itself, what it really looks like, I can't tell you whether it's something that's sucking the juices out of the plant, whether it's making round holes, irregular holes on the edges. All of that would give some indication what kind of insect you are probably seeing in your home with your anthuriums there. So without seeing it and without seeing some what the damage looks like, I can't really tell you what you might be seeing. However, you can maybe try some sticky traps that may be flying insects that are chewing it. If it's a crawling thing, that's not going to help it. But until you can identify what it is, it's kind of hard to figure out where you go. What you might want to do is take the plant outside and put it in a shady location. Maybe give it a week or two out there. See if the damage stops. It could be something that's living in the soil that comes out at night and nibbles on your plant, but that could be taken care of by a predator at night outside. If that doesn't work, then perhaps bring a leaf or take a picture of the leaf and send it to the Master Gardeners on the extension website. If you're in the Hennepin County area or close to that, we do have a self-guided tour next Saturday. It's our Learning Garden Tour. You could take a leaf to the Learning Garden Tour if you sign up to take the tour and then they might be able to identify at least what kind of damage you're seeing, give you some ideas there and do some research for you. You could try that too, or bring it to Extension Master Gardeners at a farmer's market. Bring a leaf there that has some damage on it.
All right. Thanks, Teresa. And thank you for bringing up the learning tour next Saturday. Talk a little bit more about that in case somebody's interested in joining.
Okay, so in Hennepin County, we have a learning garden tour every year. This year, it's in the southern part of Hennepin County. It will be 10 gardens. I was going to say 10 plants. No, it's 10 gardens. And the cost is $15 per individuals, children, or people under 12. Get in for free. You can, if you buy the tickets in advance, they're $15. At the door, so to speak, they are $20 individually. It's a self-guided tour from 8:30 to 4:30, and you will see 10 different plants. We also have a book nook with the books that we've curated for the public, and also a garden shed where we've done some creative gardening crafts, and you can purchase those. All the money goes back to Hennepin County Master Gardeners so that we can continue to serve our community and share gardening information with them. So there'll be education stations at every garden. Each garden focuses on a different project. So the lady, Kathy, the early girl tomato question, bring a leaf or two there if you're going to the tour. Put it in a plastic bag, a Ziploc bag, and they might be able to, the vegetable gardening people would probably know exactly what they're seeing. If you're seeing a weird bug, put it in a jar, bring it there. Don't let it loose, but show the Master Gardeners and... Don't share your problems with the gardeners.
This is a show and tell, not a share and
right,
tell.
Right, it's a show and tell. And hopefully then you could show the Master Gardeners and they will tell you what you're seeing. But yes, you'll have lots of Master Gardeners there to answer questions, and every garden is different. And these are gardens by Master Gardeners, actual Master Gardener gardens. So you get to peek behind the scenes, so to speak.
I might have to do that. If somebody wants more information, where should they go?
They can go to HennepinMasterGardeners.org, or they can just go to the Extension website, go way down to the bottom, and I think it's the second class or event offering, and you can just click on that and get transferred right over to the place you need to go to.
Super. And that Extension website is extension.umn.edu. All kinds of wonderful information.
And
on
go
that
to
site.
The Yard and Garden page if it doesn't come up directly to the Yard and Garden page because you've visited so often already, speaking of Teresa.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, another texter. I am getting big patches of white clover in our lawn this year. Many lawns in our community also have a lot of clover. Is it the right growing temps and rain? What's going on?
It's wonderful. It's the right growing temps and rain, and a lot of people are are seeding their lawns with clover because clover helps with bee lawns and bee pollination. It helps to keep those pollinators happy. They love the clover. And clover is one of those nitrogen-fixing plants. So as the clover grows, it has little nodules on the roots that actually absorb nitrogen from the air. And nitrogen is that first, that NPK that you see on all the fertilizers.
Yeah.
Nitrogen helps you green up, helps the plants green up, helps the leaf production. So you want nitrogen. So if you have clover in your lawn, as the roots die during the year and then new roots are growing, those little nodules get released and they're actually feeding the grass nearby. So so if you have grass and you have clover, that's a wonderful thing. If you like bees, if you like to have somebody else do some of the work of feeding the lawn, if however you're going to use a broadleaf weed killer in your lawn, that will kill the clover. So if you have big patches, then that means you're going to have to plant grass in those patches if you kill the clover, because you'll have big bare spots, and lots of weeds like big bare spots.
I would love to have white clover all over my lawn instead of the mushrooms that have been popping up and the dog pee spots that we can't get rid of with all of this rain. What's going on?
Okay, so the mushrooms are saying, hey, Laura, you have a really healthy lawn here.
Oh, good.
You have a really healthy soil because there's like all kinds of parties going on underneath the soil. So you have all this composting and breaking things down, and things are moving around in the soil. It's like a party down there.
I love it.
And then they send up these the mushrooms that we see. I always call them like mushroom flowers. They're not a flower, but they're the fruiting part of the plant that then can send out more spores that can lay in wait for and help with composting and things like that. So if you don't like the look of the mushrooms, just knock them down.
Yep.
No big deal. The dog spots, if you can train Fido or Fifi to go in one area, maybe put wood chips in that area so that they urinate and defecate in one area that's wood chips and it's no green stuff is being killed. They're basically over-fertilizing.
Yeah.
The lawn is what they're doing. Or if you're really on the ball, which I would never be, as soon as your dog urinates there, you just give it a really good drink of water, and that helps wash all that extra urine and salt and everything further into the soil so it doesn't impact your grass
okay.
as much.
Good plan. It's a training
otherwise you
thing.
Otherwise, you just scratch it out, and as you get the yellow spots, and then you put down the patch and the lawn patch. Dogs and lawns are great for the dogs and not so good for the grass. It's kind of tough on the grass.
What do you think about gypsum? Does that help?
That really doesn't help. And that's putting rocks or, you know, like a rock in your yard. It may help in other. It's not as helpful as you would hope it would be.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say. And it's not really, as far as I know, recommended anymore for us. But, you know, further out east where it's a really alkaline or real acidic soil, that may help a little bit, but we don't have that problem with too acidic soils. So,
Got it. All right, back to the text line. Is it okay to use runoff water from reverse osmosis on outside plants and shrubs?
Sure, that would be wonderful.
Water's water, huh?
Water. Well, from it. I mean, it's good health. It's good. It's water that's been, you know, actually some of the chemicals have been taken out that may impact your plants. So it doesn't have salt. It doesn't have anything like that in it. So you're not using softened water. I don't think that is how the reverse osmosis works. If it's coming out of a salt tap, then just make sure. If a softened water tap, then just make sure that. That the reverse osmosis takes that out, but I would think that would be counterintuitive to have that on that. Yeah. So it's probably on your kitchen sink or something like that where you don't need the softened water because you're not trying to get suds and bathe your body.
Gotcha. All righty. Good answers, good questions. Keep them coming. 651-461-9226. If you have a lawn or gardening question for our master gardener, Teresa Rooney, we'd love to get a few more phone calls in her last 15 minutes or so. So pick up that phone. Give us a call. It's 846. We'll be back in a moment. It's 849 on CCO. I'm Laura Oakes, and yes, you are listening to Smart Gardens. Today, our expert is Master Gardener, Hennepin County Master Gardener, Teresa Rooney. And real quick, before we get back to your calls and texts, I want to just answer a question from Mary in St. Michael this morning. She was asking about the whale watch I was describing that my husband and I were just on. Yeah, we had, it was part of our beautiful trip to the East Coast just in the past week, and she was wondering where we took this whale watch out of. So I just want to tell Mary that we stayed in Chatham on Cape Cod, which is kind of on the elbow of Cape Cod, but we drove up to the very tip to Provincetown, and that is where we took our whale watch from, was from Provincetown, and it's very...
That's where I did a whale watch.
Yes!
100 years ago. It was amazing.
So, I couldn't even believe it. We saw at least 20 whales. We saw breaching.
Oh, wow.
We saw all kinds of just... We were absolutely stunned. I still can't even believe how lucky we got. That doesn't happen all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, Mary, it was out of Provincetown. I hope you can go sometime. It was just absolutely fantastic. Thank you
They're
for your
amazing.
Text.
They're amazing.
Yes. It's just really unbelievable. And I told the story, and I'll just take 10 seconds to say that there was a whale at the very end. Her name was Juniper, who was rolling around in the water and flapping her fins for about 15 minutes straight. We thought that was just an amazing show to see. And then she started breaching and breached four times within a minute and 13 seconds. And I have video of it, and I swear I've been watching it every day since that happened. It was just...
Oh, my... I got chills.
Yes!
I got chills.
I will text it to you.
I can just imagine.
I will text it to you so you can see this. All right. Okay, let's get a few more questions in, Teresa, not to change the topic.
Okay, I could talk about whales and dolphins, too. I love them.
Me, too.
Okay, and here I am, landlocked in Minnesota.
Same.
Okay.
I know. Just got to take a trip here and there. Okie doke, here we have, let's see, 5 weeks ago we planted one of our Roma tomato plants a bit too close to our bird feeder pole. We believe that a red squirrel uses the tomato cage to jump to the feeder and eat the bird seeds. I know how that goes. What precautions should they take to move the tomato plant since it's been in the ground for about 5 weeks?
I don't know. Is it easier to move the bird feeder?
Oh, maybe.
A few feet away, because that's a pole and you don't have to worry about roots.
Right.
Otherwise, just water the tomato really well. Maybe wait till it cools down. I think it cools down 80 degrees. Okay, next week. And just dig the tomato plant up as much as you can, as big of a space as you can. Have the other hole already ready for it. And then move the tomato plant. It can be kind of brittle, especially because you'll probably be leaving the cage or on it, and moving the whole thing all together. It can be kind of awkward. Dig up a big of the roots as you can, as much of the roots as you can. Have the other hole already ready. Plant it. And then just give it another good drink of water. And just watch it a little more carefully because it's been disturbed. And try to disturb it as little as possible when you're moving it. Good luck.
Yes, very good. Here's a nice tip from one of our texters, Teresa. When you were talking about nitrogen a few minutes ago, they say they have a Japanese lilac tree that wasn't blooming because their lawn service was using nitrogen in the lawn and too close to the tree. So they enlarged their garden under the tree.
I like
so
that
So they
response.
Had to stay away from the tree. And this year it bloomed.
I like the response. That's a wonderful response.
I love that, too. More garden.
More garden.
Yes, good. Let's talk a little bit about the heat since we've been coming out of big hot stretch and it looks like we have another one coming next week.
Yep.
Do we have some heat lovers, heat haters when it comes to plants in our gardens, and what should we be doing differently when it's this hot?
What you can do, you will notice, and one of the articles on the Extension website speaks to this before I wanted to talk about it, but so what you may see with your vegetable gardens or your flowers, that they stop growing, they kind of drop all the fruit that they may be carrying, all the peppers or tomatoes, if they have any. They may drop all their flowers, if they're a vegetable that has flowers. And they just kind of sit there. They're kind of waiting it out. So do keep them well watered. You don't want to overwater them, but you want them to be as hydrated as they possibly can. It's a lot like people. We want to be as hydrated as we possibly can. The heat is very stressful for most plants when there's such a big difference. And also some of those plants may do with a little shade cloth. They may do better with a little shade cloth or a little protection from really strong winds that are coming in, or just maybe some shade from the west sun. You just put a sheet between them and the west sun. They can still get the south and the east sun, but that hot west sun, you just break that up a little bit, whether it's a sheet or some burlap or shade cloth. You put that shade cloth over. That can still let the water in if you're putting it over the plants. So just give them some shade. Don't expect a lot out of them. They're not going to be running a marathon right now, yeah. Just like you shouldn't be running a marathon. You should be setting out and just being a little more gentle with yourself. So it's the same thing. We can't expect the plants to be doing a whole lot. They're just really stressed, and so they may just be waiting out the heat or the storms or whatever. So just do what you can. Water, shade cloth if necessary. If they're in a pot, maybe you can move the pot out of the sun so they only get the east and the south sun. They don't get the hot west sun and all that heat. If they're in pots, then you can set them into a bigger pot. Don't dig them up. Just put the whole pot into a bigger pot. You then can help the roots to be a little cooler, because the sun hitting that outside pot won't warm up the air between the two pots as much. So you get a little buffer there, and it just kind of keeps the roots a little cooler so the roots aren't frying in the heat.
Good.
So, give them. And all of these things are also on the website, so you can go back to the extension website and just review them and any other ones I've missed.
Super. And it sounds like it's okay to let your plants just have a little nap when it's this hot. Just
let them rest.
Alone. Yep.
Give them a vacation.
Yep.
Let them rest. Don't expect too much. Don't make them work 9 to 5. You know, let them just take a little vacation.
Perfect. We have time for one more question, Teresa.
Okay.
Somebody lost a very large part of a beautiful red maple tree earlier this week. The tree needs to come down, according to the local arborist.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Their entire front yard was based on full shade plants, and now it's going to be full sun.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to make lemons out of lemonade, reconfigure the front yard landscaping. And they were the arborist suggested to them getting a Sienna Glen maple tree. Is it okay to be planting it in the same place as the current tree that's coming down?
It would be okay in this case, because they probably lost the tree due to a wind damage or something like that, rather than a verticillium wilt or something. If it was due to a disease, maybe contact the arborist again and say the tree was suffering from verticillium wilt or some maple disease that I'm not aware of. Should I still do a maple in that area? And then I would just maybe do a little bit of research on the one that was suggested. I have not heard of that one. Just to be careful, what problems are people seeing with this tree? Does it have bad branch attachment? Does it grow too fast and have weak attachments? Is it a good, strong tree and it grows fairly quickly and it's a good tree to have in your yard? Just do some research on that first.
All right, super.
And good luck with your tree, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Yes, that is such a bummer when you lose a tree.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Teresa, thanks again for another great week. We'll chat again
soon.
Thank
you, Laura.
You bet.
Everybody stay safe and well out there.
Very nice. It's 8:57 on CCO. Coming up, we'll catch up with the latest news from ABC and Al, and then get your home improvement questions ready for the one and only Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction. Coming up.